Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And one of the ways in which class matters is that the ruling capitalist class, the owners of the means of production, and increasingly of greater importance, the owners of big finance, the big bankers, etc.
Big pharma.
Big pharma, big oil, big agra, all
military
of those.
Military industrial complex.
Yeah, the deep state. They have been...
And the media, of course.
Yeah. They have been interfering in our elections for decades. In fact, when you hear talk about fixed elections and so on and so forth, really, to put this in context, it's doubtful that we've ever really had free and fair elections in this country. We certainly haven't had them in decades. If you just think about the power of big money in elections, the power to buy votes, essentially, by controlling the media, buying media time, controlling the message.
Ballot access laws are a biggie.
Yeah.
Only the two main parties can get on easily. And then they tell you that we have a two-party system, just like it says in the Constitution. No. It says nothing about two parties in the Constitution. As a matter of fact, the Founding Fathers were against parties, at least a lot of them.
Right. It says nothing about political parties.
Right.
In the Constitution.
So, it starts there, really. Well, it starts with the brainwashing that this is a two-party system. Then it goes on to ballot access. People are like, forget this. We want a choice. Let's start a new party. Hey, kids, let's start a new party. Just like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, right? So you go out and you find out, to start a new party, you have to get, 75,000 signatures. What?
Right,
yeah. And then after that, even if you manage it, the Democrats it's usually the Democrats, let's face it, challenge them. So then you have to spend, 6 weeks, going over each line one by one to meet the challenge. And then you get no media attention, and then it goes on from there. So even when they don't actually literally steal the vote or stuff the ballot boxes with mail-in votes that clearly weren't mailed in because they weren't creased, right? Even if they stuff the ballot boxes, it starts way before them.
Exactly. And what's really changed is simply that they've added new weapons in their arsenal of ways to control the outcomes of elections, including the direct electoral interference that you're talking about. Not just the mail-in ballots, but of course the electronic voting machines and some of the problems with them.
So the election of 2000 was widely known, acknowledged to be stolen by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Right? That was nine voters decided that election. So people were outraged, especially Democrats.
Right.
You know, but they weren't thrown in jail for being outraged. Congress pretended to address the Help America Vote Act, and the Help America Vote Act was where they took all the paper ballots, put into ballot boxes and counted by the people that when you go vote, there's some volunteers there. That all got taken away and they put in billions and billions of dollars for these electronic voting machines that the software was proprietary and you couldn't see it.
Right.
So Help America Vote will help America vote for however the machines are rigged.
Yeah.
Basically.
It was help the American ruling class fix is what it was.
That's
and
right.
So there's that. And then, of course, in more recent years, we've also seen the national security state even get more deeply embedded in the media, such that the media is basically, or at least the corporate media, the legacy media, is an arm of the national security state for the most part.
I think the Hunter Biden laptop is the most egregious example of that in 2020.
Right.
But now, this is something I've never seen in America before, where they're literally trying to take the leading candidate off the ballot.
Yeah.
And then going after him with bogus lawsuits. This is a new one.
So the weaponizing of the legal system is yet another wrinkle. And with all of this background in mind, we wanted to share with you, I think, a very good article by Matt Taibbi, a very excellent independent investigative journalist whose work you can find at Racket News, racket.news on the internet. Again, as with other Substacks, they want you to subscribe, but if you hit the no thanks button, you can read it and preview it, and you can read this article. The article is entitled, Is the Electoral Fix Already In? And Matt Taibbi begins by answering his own question. the fix is in.
Yeah, for sure.
To protect democracy, in quotes, democracy is already being canceled. We just haven't admitted the implications of this to ourselves yet. On Sunday, January 14th, NBC News ran an eye-catching story. Fears grow that Trump will use the military in dictatorial ways if he returns to the White House. It described a quote-unquote loose-knit network of public interest groups and lawmakers that is quietly making plans to foil any efforts to expand presidential power on the part of Donald Trump. The piece quoted an array of former high-ranking officials, all insisting Trump will misuse the Department of Defense to execute civilian political aims.
Well, wait a minute. If they take away his power, will he be able to bomb Yemen whenever he wants?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Wow,
good question.
Seems like tie his hands. What about Somalia?
Right.
Will he be able to bomb Somalia?
Well, or any place that needs bombing.
Yeah.
Right. Since Joe Biden's team, quote-unquote, leaked a strategy memo in late December listing Trump is an existential threat to democracy as campaign 2024's central talking point.
This is so funny because we've been through, 8 years now of free speech is a threat to democracy. And now we've moved up to voting for the candidate you want is a threat to democracy.
Right, right, exactly. Surrogates have worked overtime to insert existential or democracy in quotes. This was no different. For example, we're about 30 seconds away from the Armageddon clock when it comes to democracy, said Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defense William Cohen, adding that Trump is a clear and present danger to our democracy.
They're using the words of treason. This is ridiculous. This is over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like Keith Olbermann is writing all the talking points.
Yeah, that's right. Sky Perryman of Democracy Forward, one of the advocacy groups organizing the so-called Loose Coalition, said, "We believe this is an existential moment for American democracy," declared former CIA and Defense Chief Leon Panetta. Quote, "Like any good dictator, he's going to try to use the military to basically perform his will." And on it goes.
Look at Biden. Tried to nationalize the Texas National Guard. But Trump is the problem
right.
with using the military for his own.
Right.
You know, it'll be a good drinking game for the rest of the year. Every time they say existential or democracy, you take a drink.
Or democracy is on the ballot. Yeah. Right, which was Biden's tagline now. Former Acting Assistant Attorney General for National Security at the U.S. Department of Justice and current visiting Georgetown law professor Mary McCord was one of the few coalition participants quoted by name. She said, quote, "We're already starting to put together a team to think through the most damaging types of things that he, Trump, might do so that we're ready to bring lawsuits if we have to," unquote. The group was formed by at least two organizations that have been hyperactive in filing lawsuits against Trump and Trump-related figures over the years. The aforementioned Democracy Forward, chaired by former Perkins Coie and Hillary Clinton campaign attorney Mark Elias, and Protect Democracy, a ubiquitous nonprofit run by a phalanx of former Obama administration lawyers like Ian Bassin, and funded at least in part by LinkedIn magnate Reid Hoffman. The article implied a future Trump presidency will necessitate new forms of external control over the military. It cited Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal's bill to clarify, in scare quotes, the Insurrection Act, a 1792 law that empowers the president to deploy the military to quell domestic rebellion. Blumenthal's act would add a requirement that Congress or courts ratify presidential decisions to deploy the military at home, seeking essentially to attach a congressional breathalyzer to the presidential steering wheel. NBC's quotes from former high-ranking defense and intelligence officials about possible preemptive mutiny were interesting on their own. However, the really striking twist was that we'd read the story before. For over a year, the Biden administration and its surrogates have dropped hint after hint that the plan for winning in 2024 against Donald Trump or anyone else might involve something other than voting. Lawsuits in multiple states have been filed to remove Trump from the ballot.
Because democracy.
Right, exactly. Primaries have been canceled or invalidated. An ominous Washington Post editorial by Robert Kagan, husband to senior state official Victoria Nuland.
Boo.
Yeah, exactly. Read like an APB to assassins to head off an inevitable, in quotes, Trump dictatorship. And on January 11th of this year, leaders of a third party group called No Labels sent an amazing letter to the Department of Justice complaining of a conspiracy to stop alternative votes. Authored by former NAACP Director Ben Chavis, former Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, former Director of National Intelligence Dennis Blair, former North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory, and former Assistant U.S. Attorney and Iran-Contra Special Counsel Dan Webb, the No Labels letter described a meeting of multiple advocacy groups aligned with the Democratic Party. In the 80-minute confab, audio of which was obtained by Semaphore, a dire warning was issued to anyone considering a third-party run. And this is a quote. Through every channel we have, to their donors, their friends, the press, everyone, everyone should send the message. If you have one fingernail clipping of a skeleton in your closet, we will find it. If you think you were vetted when you ran for governor, you're insane. That was nothing. We're going to come at you with every gun we can possibly find. We did not do that with Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, the Green and Libertarian Party candidates last time.
They just made up stuff about Jill.
Right.
They just lied. So why would they even have to look into these people? They just lie and the media prints it and the media slurpers believe it.
Yeah. But, I mean, they could find real stuff, too. In any event, they said that they did not do that with Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, the third-party candidates in 2016. We should have, and we will not make that mistake again. The Semaphore piece offered a rare glimpse into the Zoom politics culture that's dominated Washington since the arrival of COVID-19. If this is how Beltway insiders talk about how to keep Joe Lieberman or Ben Chavis out of politics, imagine what they say about Trump. We don't have to imagine. 3.5 years ago, in June and July of 2020, an almost exactly similar series of features to the recent NBC story began appearing in media, describing another loose network of bipartisan officials also meeting quietly to war game scenarios in case Trump loses and insists he won, as the Washington Post put it. That group, which called itself the Transition Integrity Project, or TIP, involved roughly 100 former officials, think tankers, and journalists, well, journalists you can put in quotes, who gathered to war game contested election scenarios. This loose network included big names like former Michigan governor and current energy secretary Jennifer Granholm.
Oh, she of the fake FBI plot against her.
Right. And former Hillary Clinton campaign chief John Podesta.
Oh, well-known you-know-what.
Right. Who in his current role as special advisor to President Joe Biden, overseeing the handout of roughly $370 billion in clean energy investments, is one of the most powerful people in Washington.
Oh, no, that's a conspiracy theory. Yeah, you can't say John Podesta is powerful.
The TIP was hyped like the rollout of a blockbuster horror flick. In a second Trump term, no one will hear you scream.
Well, no, because they put you in solitary confinement.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wait, no, that's Biden. Sorry, there wasn't a second Trump term. That was Biden that threw people in jail.
Yeah. Stories in NPR, the Financial Times, the Atlantic, the Washington Post, and over a dozen other major outlets outlined apocalyptic predictions about Trump's unwillingness to leave office and how this would likely result in mass unrest, even bloodshed.
I read that. It was like a color revolution playbook.
Yeah.
They were going to have riots. But notice that the riots that had been going on all that year, 2020, stopped the day of the election.
Yeah.
Because they said that Biden won. If they'd have said Trump won, those riots would have gotten worse.
Yeah. A typical quote was from TIP co-founder, Georgetown law professor, and former Pentagon official Rosa Brooks, who told the Boston Globe that every one of the group simulations ended in chaos and violence because, quote, the law is almost helpless against a president who's willing to ignore it, unquote.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Podesta played Joe Biden in one TIP simulation and in one round refused to accede to a clear Trump win, threatening instead to seize a block of West Coast states, including California, absurdly dubbed Cascadia, and secede. Podesta's frankly ridiculous move, as one TIP participant described it, was so over the top that a player leaked it to media writer Ben Smith of the New York Times.
I do remember that. They call it Cascadia because it's there, those mountains up there. That includes Washington and Oregon.
Right. The latter in Timesian fashion stuck the seeming front page tale near the bottom of an otherwise breezy August 2nd story titled How the Media Could Get the Election Story Wrong.
You think?
Yeah. And then quoting the Times here, quoting this article, a group of former top government officials called the Transition Integrity Project actually gamed four possible scenarios that doesn't look that different from 2016. A big popular win for Mr. Biden and a narrow electoral defeat. They cast John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, in the role of Mr. Biden. They expected him, when the votes came in, to concede. But Mr. Podesta shocked the organizers. He persuaded the governors of Wisconsin and Michigan to send pro-Biden electors to the Electoral College. In that scenario, California, Oregon, and Washington then threatened to secede from the United States if Mr. Trump took office.
Well, actually, Hillary Clinton did that. They tried then to get some of the Democrats in Congress on the electoral certification day. I don't know what day it was in 2017. In 2021, it was January 6th, as we all know now. But yeah, they tried to stir up senators and representatives to refuse to go along with the announced vote. Like Barbara Boxer and who was it, Stephanie Tubbs did in 2004, and all the Democrats cheered because they refused to go along with it. Boy, but when Republicans, and they didn't even really refuse, they were trying to give the evidence, but they shut down the Congress before they could finish giving it.
Yeah, yeah. News that Hillary Clinton's former campaign chief rejected a legal election result, even in a hypothetical simulation, was obvious catnip to conservative media, which took about 10 minutes to repackage Smith's story using the same alarmist headline format marking earlier tip write-ups. Breitbart published, Democrats' War Game for Election Includes West Coast Secession, Possible Civil War, and a cascade of further red state freakouts seemed inevitable. At that point, says Nils Gilman, COO and EVP of programs at the Berggruen Institute think tank, who served alongside Brooks as Tip's other co-founder, we decided we needed to be out about having run this exercise to prevent the allegation that this was a shadowy cabal. Not that that narrative didn't take hold anyways. The final Tip report was released the next day, August 3rd, 2020, titled Preventing a Disrupted Presidential Election and Transition. The full text was, as any person attempting an objective read will grasp, sensational. The Podesta episode was worse than reported, with the secession proposal coming on advice from President Obama, used as leverage to A, secure statehood for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, B, divide California into five states to increase its Senate representation, and C, eliminate the Electoral College, among other things.
'Cause democracy.
Right, exactly. Tip authors also warned Trump's behavior could push other actors, including potentially some in the Democratic Party, to similarly engage in practices that depart from traditional rule of law norms out of perceived self-defense.
Oh, unquote. Rule of law. Yeah. Boy, said by the most lawless people I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. More tellingly, there were multiple passages on the subject of abiding by and or trusting in the law and how this can be a weakness. Tip authors concluded that as an incumbent unbounded by norms, President Trump has a huge advantage in the upcoming election, and chided participants that planners need to take seriously the notion that this may well be a street fight, not a legal battle.
Yeah, what they're saying is that was just a little foreshadowing. Well, it was a lot of foreshadowing, but that part about not paying attention to the law if it doesn't suit you, they took that to heart.
Yeah, they did. They added the key observation that a reliance on elites observing norms are not the answer here. Asked about that passage, Gilman replied that it was the right question. In other words, why can't we just rely on elites to observe and enforce norms? Noting that two-thirds of the GOP caucus voted not to certify the 2020 election, he went on, if I had had total confidence in the solidity of the institutions, I wouldn't have felt the need to run the exercises. And then it goes on here talking about this exercise, but want to skip down in the article because want to get to something that's, I think, pretty interesting here. One of the parts of the TIP report stated, and I'm quoting again, additional presidential powers subject to misuse include his, meaning Trump's, ability to restrict internet communications in the name of national security, end quote. As for restricting internet communications in the name of national security, racket, Racket News pauses to laugh.
Well, yeah, because Matt Taibbi has really been trashed for reporting.
Yeah, exactly.
And he has been actually reporting on all the censorship and banning and attempts to get rid of social media, horizontal communication, that the Democrats have been doing ever since late 2016, but ramping it up in 2017.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then really increasing the censorship in the 2020s.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Big time.
Taibbi continues, the growth of state-aided censorship initiatives like the ones we studied all last year in the Twitter files began well before Trump's election. For instance, with the creation in Barack Obama's last year of the State Department's Global Engagement Center, which later worked with Stanford's Election Integrity Partnership to focus heavily on posts deemed to be attempts at delegitimization in the 2020 election. Stanford's group even flagged a story about the TIP in its final report as a conspiracy theory, unquote.
No, it was just a conspiracy, actually.
Yeah. Not to say that these bureaucracies couldn't be abused by a second Trump administration, but so far they've been a near exclusive fixation of Democratic Party politicians and security officials.
It's projection, which is a sign of the psychopaths. Not only projection, accuse others of that which you are doing, but foreshadowing.
Yeah.
You know, they're telling you what they're going to do.
What they're going to do by blaming it on somebody else. Yeah. There's a reason Joe Biden is the only candidate slated to enjoy a censorship-free campaign season, while Trump and third-party challenger Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have been repeatedly removed or de-amplified from various platforms, meaning social media platforms. And then this quote from the Tip Report. There is considerable room to use foreign interference, real or invented, as a pretext to cast doubt on the election results or more generally to create uncertainty about the legitimacy of the election.
Again, that is major projection.
Yeah.
We've gone through 7 years of listening to the Democrats scream that Russia stole the election.
Yeah, that's right. This may have been the most amazing line in the TIP report, given that the entire Trump presidency was marked by stories like how Russia helped swing the election for Trump from the New Yorker, or did Russia affect the 2016 election? It's now undeniable from Wired.
Liars.
Or Russia turned election for Trump, Clapper believes from PBS. Or yes, Russian election sabotage helped Trump win from Bloomberg. And a personal favorite, CIA director wrongly says U.S. found Russia didn't affect election results. That was from NBC. And he's got links to all of these. There was so much Russia hacked the election messaging between 2016 and 2020, in fact, that our Matt Orfalia made two movies about it. Here's one. Now, at this point, we're going to share this with you. It's a short, about a 5-minute video. Now, obviously, this is radio, so you can't see it, but the voices you'll hear begin with Karine Jean-Pierre, who is the Biden administration spokesperson, answering a recent question from a reporter about the claims that the election was stolen in 2020, right?
It ends with her, too.
Right. But then we hear he's asking, well, what about 2016? And then we hear, in fact, corroboration that, yes, we did hear this a lot in 2016.
Oh, any American should be able to remember that. If they're honest, we heard nothing but that. And remember that there are people still sitting in jail who did the same thing these people are going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically said, I think the election is not valid.
Right.
But they're in jail.
Right. And just like we heard about in 2020, there were violent protests in 2016 after the election and early 2017, during the inauguration.
Yeah, they put some of that in there. But they're way more violent than breaking a couple of windows in the Capitol. I mean, they were burning things.
Yeah.
They were smashing car windows. They were burning cars. It was
smashing stores. Yeah.
Smashing store windows. Yeah. They were horrible. And again, like I always bring up, there's people from Carbondale involved in that stuff.
Right.
But it wasn't presented as an insurrection.
Right, right. So among the voices you'll hear in this clip, besides Karine Jean-Pierre, you'll hear Jesse Jackson, a lot of Hillary Clinton herself saying the election was stolen, Kamala Harris, Rosie O'Donnell, Jimmy Fallon, Rachel Maddow, Stephen Colbert, Elizabeth Warren, Al Sharpton, and Keith Olbermann, among others.
The usual suspects.
Yeah,
but
usual
of course
suspects.
There was more, as any honest American will remember.
Yeah.
So if we're all in agreement that it is incorrect to say the 2020 election was stolen, what about the 2016 election?
Look, I'm not gonna
go back into history.
was a stolen election.
It was stolen.
Stolen. He's an illegitimate president. He's an illegitimate president.
You know, pretending to be president.
Why do you think the president is going to such great lengths to essentially prove that he beat you?
Because he didn't.
One third of Clinton supporters say Trump election is not legitimate.
I think he's an illegitimate president that didn't really win.
You are absolutely right.
You can run the best campaign. You can even become the nominee. And you can have the election stolen from you.
The 2016 election was stolen.
Got a nicer way to say that?
Say Russia hacked the election.
Russia hacked our election.
Russia hacked our election.
A little louder, please.
Russia hacked our election. That was a 9/11 scale event.
This was a kind of cyber 9/11.
American cyber 9/11.
Yes.
Russia hacked our election.
Russia, you know, of course, hacked our election here.
Half of Clinton's voters believe the conspiracy theory that Russia hacked Election Day votes.
We know that they were into voting roles, actual interference with the elections themselves. We know it happened.
Despite no credible evidence, 67% of Democrats believe Russia tampered with vote tallies.
Hacking the U.S. election.
Hacking the U.S. election.
Russia hacked our election.
The Russians hacked our election.
Russia hacked our election.
Russia hacked our election.
Russian hacking of our election.
Hacking of our election.
Russia hacked our election.
Russia hacked our election.
Stolen election.
Russia hacked our election.
Russia hacked our election.
The universal assessment that Russia hacked our election 2016.
Foreign governments hacked our elections.
Most young Americans consider Donald Trump an illegitimate president.
He's an illegitimate president.
Why is he illegitimate? He just won an election.
He's an illegitimate president in my mind. That's it.
I absolutely agree.
Experts urge Clinton camp to challenge election results.
We will see how illegitimate his victory actually was.
He's an illegitimate president.
Russia hacked our election.
Russians hacking our election.
Hacked our election.
Russia hacking our election.
I don't see the president-elect as a legitimate president.
Trump is an illegitimate president who stole the election.
He is not a president.
He's illegitimate. And my biggest fear is that he's going to do it again with the help of Vlad, his best pal. It's terrifying.
Would you be my vice presidential candidate?
Hillary Clinton voters call to overturn election results.
More than 4 million people have already signed a petition on change.org calling for the electors of the Electoral College to, quote, ignore their state's votes and cast their ballots for Secretary Clinton.
Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016.
We are the victims of a bloodless coup.
He didn't win the general election.
Yo, Electoral College, make Hillary Clinton president, period.
Donald Trump is an illegitimate president.
Illegitimate president.
Dems don't accept Trump as a legitimate president.
This wasn't on the level.
This election was not on the level.
I don't think he's a legitimate president.
Our election wasn't legit!
He got his victory from cheating.
Yes, Trump cheated.
Trump cheated the 2016 election.
He's an illegitimate president.
No validity, no credibility.
And because of that,
anger at what some see as an illegitimate president.
Donald Trump has got to go.
It will not be a peaceful change of power.
A number of incidents turned violent.
Protesters hurled trash cans, flash bombs, and objects at police.
Several officers injured.
Protesters threw rocks and smashed windows, leading to more confrontations, injuries, and arrests.
The chaotic scene just blocks outside the secure area of the inauguration.
If denying election results is extreme now,
why would let's be really clear. That comparison that you made is just ridiculous.
Protests against Donald Trump's election victory surged overnight, and some became violent.
Violence erupted on the streets of Portland during the second straight day of protests over the election of Donald Trump. Some protesters launched fireworks and other projectiles at police. Several people began vandalizing cars. Some demonstrators smashed store windows. Protesters faced off with police in other cities too, including Oakland, Denver, and Minneapolis.
Violent protests continuing now for the third day in a row. Some 4,000 angry demonstrators over Trump's election victory taking to the streets.
Officers in front of thousands of protesters in what police called a riot.
Setting fires, taking their frustrations out on cars and buildings. People threw projectiles at officers and damaged property as well. I threw a trash can at them because I'm angry.
One woman driving through was attacked as someone used a bat to smash her windshield.
They are undermining our democratic process, everything that we stand for.
Okay, so that was the clip we just heard by Matt Orfalia. There is more to this article. We have been sharing with you a really good article by Matt Taibbi, called Is the Electoral Fix Already In? There's more to this article, but we're just about out of time. And you can find this article at racket.news on the internet. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.